So this reading from the book of the prophet Jeremiah is one of those places in Scripture where it can be very tempting to hear it from the perspective of us being the hero. Oh, I'm hearing how God is going to protect me, take vengeance for me, be like a mighty champion for me. We have to remember fundamentally Scripture is about Jesus Christ, actually, and also that it is rarely fruitful for us to take a passage of Scripture and pat ourselves on the back as a result. It's generally more fruitful for our hearts to actually ask what we share in common with those whom we might otherwise consider the villains of the story. Because if you go just a few verses prior to this, what is the reason that Jeremiah is so hated? It is because he is calling the people out for being stiff-necked. What does that mean? Why? Why are they being stiff-necked? We have to remember that at this time, Israel, as is often the case, is fascinated with, entranced by its own possibility of security and success. But this is at the expense of the poor. They're ignored and abused, as Jeremiah points out. This is at the expense of worship. Even if you were to take away the temptation to pagan worship, the worship of God is surface deep. And in terms of idolizing their security, they will, despite Jeremiah's warnings, in their stiffness of neck, make alliances with foreign powers that will lead to them being utterly decimated in the Babylonian captivity. Jeremiah is not a type for us. Jeremiah is a type for Jesus. And this dynamic is the one that we should return to when we find ourselves, as we always do as fallen human beings, stiff-necked. It has been about 2 months since Journey in Faith was announced. We need to have some very serious reflection, because 6 years we've insisted we're special, we're different. We are Catholics who take our faith seriously. And in the 2 months since the announcement, that's not the fruit that I've seen. If we look for the fruit of charity, the emails and phone calls that have been sent and left with me, with the staff, are at the place where I've heard staff say, I've had professional careers elsewhere, and I've never been treated so poorly as when I worked for the church. And that's not just here. It's other places as well. But I'm your pastor. And then when I brought that to the surface in a bulletin article, I had people double down, emailing back, going, well, you got to understand, people are hurting. Absolutely not. There is no excuse among people who are disciples of Jesus Christ to lack charity, especially to those who are seeking to serve the church. I still have to console crying parents because people lash out at them for the noise that their kids make, despite years of announcements. I still have people approach and go, you know, why are we having so many of the homeless around? I've heard things said and read things written about the Archbishop or the Holy Father that would make Martin Luther blush. We worry about the witness that we give. I have people asking, you know, how do I respond to this particular objection from my Protestant neighbors or friends? Let me take a sample. I was talking with a friend of mine who's Protestant, of goodwill, takes biblical morality seriously. What they have seen of this process led them to say to me, I've heard for years that you Catholics are different because you follow authority. But really, this has shown me that we aren't different. Brothers and sisters, that kind of witness or counter-witness is something we will have to answer for. I understand that we have been hurting. I think I've said to you before, this is the church I want to be buried from in many, many, many years. This is not just an assignment that I've got. In 6 years, this place has become home. But Jesus made us for more. Every step of the way over these last couple of months has been a battle that reveals a disproportionate grief and an attachment to the way that things are. This is not Father Aaron playing the world's saddest song on the world's smallest violin. Been a priest for 10 years. I can handle some pushback. This is me as a pastor who has to answer not for the occupancy of my church, but for the occupancy of the kingdom of heaven, of the souls that were entrusted to me. We have a choice in front of us. And it is Jesus who, in his providence, has allowed us to be in the situation that we find ourselves in. So will we treat him the way Jeremiah was treated? Or will we hear the call of the gospel? This is a reminder that we have a mission. And for the last 2 months, we have pretty squarely sat and thrown a pity party instead. What I say to you in the darkness, speak in the light. What you whisper, what you hear whispered, proclaim on the housetops. We finally have people in the neighborhood of these parishes signing up for OCIA. Will they find an embittered, divided, self-focused community, or will they find something different from the world? How much time have we spent bargaining with God, drawing limits on how far we'll participate in the pastorate, when we could be turning our heart generously to the things that are in front of us, the people God has given to us, the poor who are in need? If our only focus is what do we have to do to get a mass back, that is falling short. Dorothy Day said that we love God exactly as much as the person we love the least. We are attached to God exactly as much or as little as the thing we can't think to live without. The thing that tips us over the edge to be uncharitable, to defend our uncharity, to hunker down. We are allowed to be sad, but we are not allowed to be uncharitable. We are not allowed to start looking like the world. We are not allowed to abandon our mission. Because fundamentally, that betrays the truth that we have not yet seen God for who he is. Because Jesus, kind of in the sandwich of the call to not be afraid, reminds us why. And it is not because everything is going to go well. It is because of who God is. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in Gehenna. We sometimes think, oh, that's the devil. It's not. That's God. This is a reminder that God is worthy of awe. And then the very next sentence, are not two sparrows sold for a small coin, yet not one of them falls to the ground without your Father's knowledge. Even all the hairs of your head are counted. We have a God who is simultaneously this awesome, wonderful, even terrifying greatness. And he chooses to number the hairs on our head and to be so tender with us that he compares us to many sparrows. Is that the God who has been stirring up our fear, our viciousness? Is that the voice that has been speaking to us? Or is that the voice that comes to us carrying a cross saying, yes, you want to be different than different looks like the cross. It is from the cross that fruit comes. You may say, but Father, look at all of the things that have gone well. Why us? And I don't have an answer. And I won't have an answer. Because my job is not to give you answers, it is to give you Jesus. And so what does St. Paul say? That through one man sin enters the world. But the gift is not like the transgression. Because if by the transgression of the one many died, how much more did the grace of God and the gracious gift of the one man, Jesus Christ, overflow for the many? This is the Jesus Christ we believe in. But we have been acting as if this is a Jesus Christ who only rations out his grace in the ways that are comfortable and familiar to us. We are allowed to be sad. We are allowed to grieve. But it is also time that we took our mission seriously. A mission that has always transcended this building, the people sitting in the pews next to us, that has transcended the line of pastors that has led up to myself. The mission that Jesus Christ gave to us to proclaim in the darkness the light, to be channels not of a limited grace, only in the ways that we can imagine, but in the overflowing gracious generosity that is reflective of his own heart. You may go, Father, where is this coming from? Why are you not your usual warm, fuzzy, gentle self? Has someone changed you? Are you reading from a script, being a company man? You need to understand the way that I have thought about my own ministry as pastor. My experience with you has always been one of a community that is suffering. And so I've taken the words of Isaiah about Jesus, a bruised reed he did not break, a smoldering wick he did not quench. I've tried to imitate that, not always succeeded, and I ask for forgiveness when I haven't. But Jesus is asking something hard of all of us. But he doesn't leave us alone, nor without the grace to do it. I know you are good. I know you love Jesus. And so, this aspect of myself is coming out because I do not want you sinking below what I know the Lord has made you capable of. Look to Jesus. Bring him to those places of attachment that have spurned your gossip, your angry comments, your division from others, your suspicion of the church. places where you've drawn limits on what the future is going to look like. And hear Jesus say again, fear no one. The hairs on your head are counted. You are worth more than many sparrows. Do not be afraid. And if we do that, that is acknowledging Jesus before others, that he is greater than any suffering or sacrifice that is asked of us. He is greater than any conception of our reality or the way the world ought to be that we have held on to. We are acknowledging he is greater through his providence, and so we will be acknowledged before his Father. May we learn from the people of Israel who clung to their vision, cast out the voice of the prophet, to do otherwise, and to welcome the voice of Jesus. It speaks of the Father and his awe and greatness, but also of his tender love. And in letting go of what our limits are, to accept and experience the limitless love of that Father.